So this has been on my mind for a little while. To do all you can with what you've got all the while you're here. I don't know if that means anything to you, but you are still here. There's something for you to give. There's something for you to do, contribute. Les Brown is famous for saying everyone has greatness within them. He's right. You were born on purpose and with a purpose. It's not an accident that you're here. Right here at this time. I mean, like right now, hearing my words. Every choice you've made in life up to this time has led you to this moment. This is a message for you. You're supposed to hear this message right now. The question is, are you listening? Will you do something with whatever it is that's on your heart? There's something on your heart. You know you're supposed to do something about it. The question is, are you going to? I got a call this morning from an old friend, and she said, "You know, it's been on my mind to call you the last few days." So she picked up the phone and said hello. She wasn't sure why, but she just wanted to say hello. And what I can tell you, as I told her, is it's funny, I've been thinking about you and her late husband, JDK, because he gave me a copy of a book called The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. And he gave this to me, I don't know, it's probably 20 years ago. And to this day, I still read from that book, probably without exaggeration, once a week. Maybe a week goes by that I don't, but not two. So listen to your heart. Something is in the back of your mind, and today is the day you're supposed to express it. You're supposed to do something about it. Bring it to light. Live out loud. Live on purpose. Give what you've got. Now, you're not going to be able to help but from getting. You cannot help getting when you give. When you go to give, you cannot help but get. As Mother Teresa said, give anyway. Right here, right now, this message is for you.
The preacher taunted me and he smiled. Said, "Come and walk with me. Come and walk one more mile. Now for once in your life, you're alone. But you ain't got a dime. There's no time for the fool.
Live from Homer, Alaska, I'm Chris Story, and this is On Top of the World, Radio on Purpose. As I sat in my library this morning, the sun gracefully rose over the Kenai mountain range. The calm waters of the Kachemak Bay glimmered in the orange light, bathing the world as a new day was born. I reached for my mug of steaming hot Captain's Coffee from captainscoffee.com and said, thank you.
Thank you for giving us the morning. Thank you for giving us the day. Thank you for bringing on the storming. Thank you for giving us shelter we can make.
You're listening to On Top of the World Radio on Purpose. I'm Chris Story along with Mr. David Webb, bringing you what my mom calls the greatest show on earth. On Top of the World Radio, made possible by Horizon Wireless. You're asking yourself right now, hey, how's it possible for Chris to be at the corner of West Hill and Sterling Highway? And David Webb's all the way high atop the mothership, Diamond Ridge, KGTL, and KP. And how is it possible? Well, we connect ourselves through a series of wireless connectivities from Horizon Wireless. 226-3130. It's the best. It's the most solid state and yet wireless connectivity with the best back-end service you could ask for. Horizon Wireless, 226-3133.
Thank you for giving me a chance to change my fate.
All right, say it with me. It's our Optimist Creed. I've tried to rewrite it. I've tried to come up with my own. And I thought, you know what? Back in 1912... they did a pretty good job. Promise yourself to be so strong that nothing can disturb your peace of mind. Promise yourself to talk about health and happiness and prosperity to everybody you meet, no matter what else is going on. Talk about what it is you want in your life. Promise yourself to make your friends and family feel like there's something worthwhile in them. Promise yourself to look at the sunny side of everything and in your own life, make your own optimism come true. Promise yourself to think only of the best, to work only for the best, and in your own life, expect only the best. Promise yourself to be just as enthusiastic about my success as you are about your own, and forget about the mistakes you've made in your past. You've learned from them, and you are moving on to your greater achievements in your near future. Promise yourself to wear a cheerful countenance at all times and give so much time to your own self-improvement. You simply do not have time to criticize me. Promise yourself to be too large for worry, too noble for anger, too strong for fear, and too happy to permit the presence of trouble in your life because you are an optimist. Now I feel like I'm on top of the world, right? I needed that. Napoleon Hill said, whatever you can conceive and believe in your life, you can achieve. It's an interesting dichotomy there. It's an interesting formula, is a better way to say it. If you remove any piece of that puzzle, the conceive or believe, it will hamper your opportunity to achieve. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. While we're talking about Napoleon Hill, let me grab my leather-bound copy. Such an arrogant putz. Me, not Napoleon Hill, of Think and Grow Rich. My leather-bound copy is here in front of me. He said, Napoleon Hill said, there's two forms of imagination. So as you begin to think about this year, what do you want to achieve, become, do, have? Who do you want to be in 2024? How do you want to show up? Part of it is creativity. Part of it is using your imagination. And Napoleon Hill, back in 1919, actually wrote this in The Laws of Success and then translated it later into Think and Grow Rich. There's two types of imagination, synthetic and creative. And the synthetic is through this faculty, you may arrange older concepts, ideas, or plans into new combinations. This faculty creates nothing. It merely works with the material of experience, education, and observation, which it is fed. In other words, you take and you repurpose, you recycle, you redo what's been done. Maybe in a new way, but it's not reliant on you having a light bulb moment where, oh, I'm going to invent something. Maybe you reinvent. Maybe you redo the mousetrap. Maybe you make it better. Creative imagination. Now this, said Napoleon Hill, is the faculty through which creative imagination is the finite mind of man in direct communication with infinite intelligence. It's the faculty through which hunches and inspirations are received. But it's not just enough to tune in or communicate. You have to do something with either form of imagination. So my question is, in 2024, what are you going to do? You're listening to On Top of the World, Radio on Purpose. We've got an incredible show. Stick around. A lot more to come. We'll be right back. You're listening to On Top of the World, Radio on Purpose. Ronald Reagan said, government's first duty is to protect the people, not run their lives. It's worth remembering. Now, Ben, have you watched the Yellowstone series on Paramount? Kevin Costner, Taylor Sheridan's the guy who wrote it, but Kevin Costner stars in it, and then a handful of people heretofore you'd never heard of. It's interesting. So before I tell you my Yellowstone story, let me tell you my Yosemite story. Tiffany and I were getting ready to reface the front of our home with some rock. Like, we wanted a stone, like a third, whatever. Tiffany had done a design and said, okay, we need stone here. So I ordered the stone, Eldorado rock, and I'm talking with the representative on the phone. And I order it with code number. Okay, so I ordered it by code number, you know, YS-22, whatever. And I needed this many square feet. So that means equates so many boxes of this Eldorado stone. It's a cultured stone, concrete. Beautiful, though. It looks very nice. It's still there. But then it comes in. And so the woman calls and says, you know, hello, it's Mr. Story. Yes, this is Chris. Okay, we have your rock in. Your Eldorado stone has arrived, so you can come and pick it up. And she said, you've got the Yosemite, such and such. And I said, nope, you must have me mistaken. With somebody else. That's, we did not get Yosemite. We got Yosemite. It's this long silence. And she's like, what? And I said, we got Yosemite. And she said, and then she could not, I kid you not, this is a professional doing her best to not laugh at the customer. She said, okay. And I looked down at it. And as she's laughing, stifling this laugh, I looked at it and said, Yosemite, Yosemite. Oh, I felt so incredibly stupid. So that has, of course, historically in my family been, I'm known as Yosemite. So watch. So I just keep that in mind as I offer some television criticism here. The show Yellowstone itself is on the one hand an interesting show, kind of a great show to start with. And then on the other hand, it kind of doesn't make sense. Like, I don't want to spoil anything for you if you haven't seen it, but they're just randomly, indiscriminately killing people. Like, why? Why does this person have to go to the train station? What did they do? They didn't do anything. They just want to leave the ranch. They don't know anything. They're trying to take over. It's just weird. Okay, so that didn't add up. A few oddities didn't add up. At some point, I just said, never mind. I'm done. Oh, there's a new season. I don't care. It's not for me. It's just something inconsistent with the storyline and the narrative just sort of fell apart. I like the idea of protecting the ranch, and I like the idea of the ranch, and Kevin Costner's an amazing actor, but the show just didn't hold up. So then when the universe started expanding around Yellowstone with the 1840-something, with that country singer and his wife. And then in 1923, no thanks. But for no reason that I can remember, Tiffany and I just started watching 1923. So it's Harrison Ford, and that's probably the reason. Helen Mirren and Harrison Ford are like incredible actors. There's almost anything they're in is going to be fantastic. And so we started watching 1923, and I'm telling you, and I'm not advising you go watch. I'm telling you from my perspective, it's a fantastic show. It's a meaningful show so far. I think we're like five episodes in. And here's what I love about it. It's a real look inside what it took to own land, control, defend your land in a lawless age, in a lawless land. What do you have to do to defend yourself? What do you have to do to create wealth and opportunity for yourself and power and control and a struggle. And a struggle in America with family, legacy. What will be your legacy? The American pre-depression era and during prohibition era that they're portraying in 1923, the technological advancements that are just starting to emerge and show up on the Western plains. It's fantastic. It really is thought-provoking. And Harrison Ford, like I said, and Helen Mirren, really a super team, superb acting. And so I started thinking about the benefits that you and I enjoy. The benefits that have been handed down to you and me by rugged people, by real serious people that have come before. I'm talking about the pioneers who not just paved a way. Well, yes, they paved a way and then literally paved the road. And then we complain about the pothole. These people didn't have paved streets. The pioneers of old, all across this great country of America, have built something that you and I need to take a real long look at. And we can go all the way back to our revolution and our founding and our founding documents. Absolutely. And on which we should spend time talking about, thinking about, educating ourselves and our children about, and our grandchildren. These pioneers didn't get it all right. In fact, they even show that in the 1923 series, the religious groups that have flogged and beat the Indian children and took them from their homes. I mean, the laws that required them to be taken from their home. Nothing to be proud about there in those acts. However, you can still be proud of your country, which aimed towards all men are created equal, and we're still getting there. But there's so much that we've built upon. And so I've been thinking a lot about this the last week or so about this. I didn't put it this way, but you could think of it as like a hard life. Hard, what's the expression? Hard times create strong men create good times create weak men. I mean, it's like this cycle, this, you know, virtuous, if you will, cycle that kind of goes round and round. And these people had a hard life. Everything came at a cost. Everything came at the expenditure of sweat, blood, tears, effort, imagination, both kinds, creative and synthetic. And then I started listening to a podcast this morning with a woman called Brooke Castillo. Tiffany is somebody who's worked with Brooke quite a bit in her own right, but Brooke has this podcast, and she started talking about a hard life versus a soft life. And I haven't finished the episode, but it just got my mind spinning. Like, wait a minute, that, I know what she's talking about. I get it. Like, having a hard life today is on purpose. Like, if you want a meaningful life, you're going to set hard goals, obstacles, things for yourself that you have to necessarily jump over. Things that you have to, you know, that feeling after a workout, like the burn after a good workout, a good long walk. Something, a hike, something that you've done physically, that intentional burn, the feeling of maybe even accomplishing something, like writing a book and typing the end, or a paper, or completing a business deal. Maybe it's acquiring some education. Like, for example, a friend of mine, she is getting her master's degree right now. She's got a hard life, temporarily, on purpose, and by choice. She's choosing a hard life. So she can have her master's degree. She can have what on the other side of that potential will lead to a soft opportunity if she chooses to accept it. She's also showing her children what it's like to have a hard life on purpose and what's possible for you at any age and stage of life. So you can accept a soft life now and just say, you know what, it's not in the cards for me. And I don't have the potential. Other people can accomplish things. Other people can do things. You can blame the government. You can blame the fact that, hey, I've got this hard life. It's not my choice. No, it's other people's fault. A soft life, think about it like this. A soft life on purpose, through opportunity, however it came to you, is where you fall down 7 times and have only gotten up 6 times. That's a soft life. A hard life by choice is where you set yourself up to overcome whatever comes at you. whatever, forget how it used to be. Used to be's don't make no honey. Doesn't matter how it used to be. You know how it is, and you do not want a soft life. You want a hard life that allows you to land softly one day where you want to. And here's my hope and aspiration for you and I both in 2024. May it be a hard year for you, a hard year of excelling past where you are, past where you thought you could go, a hard year of starting to look for ways to give more, to be more, do more with what you've got. Where you are.
You're broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round. And you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we can walk it out. Move mountains. We can walk it out and move. And I'll rise like the day. I'll rise unafraid. I'll rise up, and I do it 1,008 times again. And I'll rise up, I like the waves. I'll rise up in spite of the ache. I'll rise up, and I do it 1,008 Silence is quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe. And I know you feel like dying, but I promise we'll take the world to.
You're listening to On Top of the World Radio on Purpose, and again, wishing you a hard life on purpose. I'm wishing you all the best, best of health, best of wealth, best of opportunity, best of friends, family. A little bit later, I want to tell you about a guy I'm introducing myself to on purpose. And may I just say, he didn't see it coming, but he has accepted this friendship that I'm foisting on him and an opportunity to have him here as a guest to talk to you and I and inspire you and I. I'll just say this. He's written 50 books. He has had nine of them turned into movies. I'm just amazed that we're in communication, and I cannot wait to bring this gentleman to you. You're listening to On Top of the World, a Radio on Purpose. We'll be right back.
Each other, and for that we have each other.
You're listening to On Top of the World, the Radio on Purpose. From the Swiss Alps comes a lot of things. How about a golden opportunity while on vacation? Golden opportunity while on vacation. You probably just didn't know this. And I don't know why you would care, to be honest with you or frank with you, but I think there's something here for you. One of your favorite salty snacks comes from the Swiss Alps, and you didn't even know it. That's right. In 1962, Pepperidge Farm founder Margaret Rudkin. First off, did you know Pepperidge Farm was founded by a woman? I did not. I find that interesting. So I heard that. I did a little looking. Well, not only did she found Pepperidge Farm, she also launched Goldfish crackers in the United States, not invented in the United States. She actually was on vacation in 1962. In Switzerland, and she saw these salty fish-shaped snacks, loved them. She went to the guy who was creating them. His name was Oscar Cambly, and he was a Swiss cracker and cookie maker. And he originally designed these little crackers for his wife for a birthday gift. He designed them because she's a Pisces, which is represented in Greek mythology as a fish. And so Margaret approached him, Oscar, and said, hey, I'd like to sell these in America. And he goes, okay, I'll license you to sell them in America. And they launched with four flavors. Get this, lightly salted, original, cheese, barbecue, pizza and smoky. Hello. What? Where are those? That sounds fantastic. 1966, 4 years after they launched, the crackers were then changed to the cheddar cheese that you and I both know. Isn't that amazing? What's the point of all this? Well, just give me a second. Their bakery, which is now owned by, I think it's Campbell Soup Company, in Willard, Ohio, they can, this is a tiny town, okay? 6,000 people live in Willard, Ohio. They can manufacture 50 million Goldfish crackers a day. 50 million Goldfish crackers are born a day in Willard, Ohio. Now, the Goldfish signature smiley face wasn't added to the lineup until 1997, and 40%, that's it, 40% of the crackers bear that smile. That's it. I guessed all of them have a smile. Nope, only 40% of the Goldfish have. Go buy a pack today, and you'll see what I'm saying. Only 40%. So those of you in Nikiski, that's 4 out of 10 are going to have a smile. Come on, I'm just being funny. What do you think about that? I mean, so a town of 6,000 people can actually pump out 50 million of these salty little crackers a day. First stop, that's lesson number one. What can your town do? What can you attract? What business opportunity can you start, build? What product do you see elsewhere in the world that can be repurposed where you are, licensed where you are? So going back to the imagination, two types, creative and synthetic. Margaret had a very creative imagination. Obviously, she came up with Pepperidge Farm. I mean, some fantastic stuff. But she then saw another idea and said, look, I'm not going to try to fight in that space. I'm just going to do as success does. I'm going to adopt this. I'm going to license this. And I'm going to bring this back to my country, to my home. And the people are going to love it. And the people did love it and do love it. So what can you do? What can you do in your town? What can you do where you are? What can you do with your business? Is there something you can expand, change, alter, license, do, create? There's something in this for you. Something, maybe you could call it a golden opportunity. I was raised up by my mama alone. Worked herself into the grave, trying to make us a home. She never left South Carolina. Oh, no. My old man didn't stick around to see me groan. He was long gone before the coffee got cold. Couldn't even know where to find him. You're listening to On Top of the World, Radio On Purpose, Little Ray Montagna. I don't know how to pronounce it, so I say Montagna. I love his music. So where do books, songs, and movies come from? You ever thought about that? Like, where do they come from? We were talking about Yellowstone and Taylor Sheridan. Now, Taylor Sheridan's become synonymous with, like, probably one of the most successful people on the planet relative to television, long-form television production, movie production. I mean, the guy is, you could say, well, he's a borderline genius. You know what he was? He was an actor. And if you ever watch Sons of Anarchy, that series, he was in that as the kind of the dimwit sheriff or sheriff's deputy. Well, he had a kind of a minor part in it. He was kind of nobody. And then he decided to write his own material. And his life changed. Everything changed. But where did that come from? I mean, was he just gifted? Was he just touched by creativity and genius? No, it came from somewhere. Well, I was thinking about that, and Stephen Pressfield's written a lot of great little books, including The Legend of Vagger Vance. If you ever saw the movie with Will Smith, that was a slap. Will Smith just slapped me. Will Smith and Matt Damon. Anyway, he wrote that book. That was his first big breakout book. Let me tell you something. Stephen Pressfield was a loser, in his own words, up until the age of 53 years of age. 53. Finally, he got something going in his life. Everything else he'd done up to then had stunk or sucked or been ignored. Up until the age of 53, he wrote that. Then, since then, he's written a string of wonderful books, some on creativity, some on war, epic battle. I mean, like really big tomes, big novels. He's a very prolific and successful author, and he writes a lot of little books for artists. He writes a lot of little books for would-be wannabe writers, people that want to tap into something else. One of the most famous is called The War of Art, kind of a play on Sun Tzu's Art of War. It's called The War of Art. It's an excellent read. I highly recommend it for anybody, but let alone if you have some inkling you want to do, create, be something or somebody different, you want to change up your life, but something's been pulling you back. Well, he will tell you, Stephen Pressfield, that it's resistance. And you can join resistance and do nothing, or you can work around it. He'll teach you. But in this book, it's called The Artist's Journey. He has a chapter called Where Do Books, Songs, and Movies Come From? Writes Stephen Pressfield. My long-held belief is that an artist's identity is revealed by the work she or he produces. Writers write to discover themselves. Again, whether they realize it or not. But who is this self they seek to discover? It is none other than the second you, the wiser you, that true, pure, waterproof, self-propelled, self-contained you. Every work you produce as an artist comes from this second you. Your first you is nothing but the vehicle that contains and initially conceals your real you. What is he saying? He's saying it's in you already. You have what it takes. You've got something in you. Going back to Les Brown, you've got greatness within you. There's something you're supposed to do. There's something that needs to come out, wants to come out. If you believe Napoleon Hill, and I do, whatever you can conceive and believe, you can achieve. And that and believe is incredibly important. Because if you don't believe it, then you're not going to conceive it. Or if you do conceive it and you don't believe it, then you're not going to really go for it, because you're going to hold yourself back. That resistance or that idea of just not revealing who you really are, it's scary. It's scary stuff. It took me a lot of years to get to that point where I didn't care. Like, for example, traditionally we open the show with the Optimist Creed, and some people leave. I don't care. That's good. It's good that they leave, because this isn't for them. It's okay. I'm here for you. We are supposed to be having this conversation, you and me, not them. And I'm okay with that. Took me a while. I'll be honest. Did take me a while to get to, like, wait a minute. This is a great filter. Yes, optimism is an incredible filter to weed out those that don't get it, aren't supposed to get it right now. Going back to this idea of where do books come from, or where do these ideas, songs, movies, where does this creative work come from? Joan Didion said, I don't know what I think about something until I write about it. And I think that kind of fits hand in hand with this concept of where do these ideas come from? What is this you, this other you, the second you that Stephen Pressfield is talking about? Think of yourself as a bit of an archaeologist. And the more you write, the more you create, the more you do, the more you conceive, the more you'll believe, the more you'll unveil or reveal, I guess I'd say, reveal of yourself what you're capable of, what's possible for you. And sometimes you have to borrow the belief. Rarely can you go borrow the conception. Rarely can you go borrow somebody else's idea. You can. Margaret Rudkin proved it. 1962, she borrowed the golden. What did I say? Goldfish? Yeah, I was going to say golden fish. Goldfish. She borrowed that idea. She licensed it, but in essence, she borrowed it. Somebody else conceived it. She believed already in her own self, since she'd already started and created Pepperidge Farm. So she borrowed the idea. So you could do that too once in a while. But I'm saying it's easier to borrow belief, because you probably already have the idea. You're nodding your head. So you do. You have the idea. Do you believe? And if not, you can borrow somebody else's belief. Tiffany, my wife, my life partner, we've been together almost 35 years now. She's believed in me at times that I couldn't see for myself what I was capable of doing. And I'd like to think that I've done the same for her. I know I have. That's how we're symbiotic in that way, that I have loaned her lent her belief in something that I knew she could do, accomplish, become, and the same with her, of me. In fact, I'd say it's more often that way that she's loaning me belief, because I've got these big ideas. Like, I really want to expand the books. In fact, just a little bit, we have a segment coming up called Right Now, which is silly because it's spelled W-R-I-T-E, right now. And this is radio. That's moronic. You can't see that. So if I say right now, you have to just believe me that I mean right, like writing now. What am I writing now? I'm going to share a chapter from my newest book in the Millionaire series. And she totally believes in me. She's constantly asking me, where are you at? How is it coming? Hand me some more pages. That's belief that's on loan. And if you need somebody to loan you some belief, I'm here to tell you, I believe in you. I don't know what it is you want to do. I don't know what it is you want to accomplish or become. I can imagine it. And I feel like, just because you and I are here, I feel like I can loan you that belief. If you ever want to talk about it, best way is to go to my website, ilovehomeralaska.com, and just reach out to me through email. And if you're writing something, it's difficult for me to look at the whole manuscript, but if you send me a few pages, like pick 10 pages that you really, really like, and let's talk about it. Let's share it. If you're trying to build a company, thinking about investing, thinking about doing something in your life, send me a note at ilovehomeralaska.com. And by the way, I don't charge any interest on that belief. We lend belief in you absolutely free of charge. There is a cost, but that comes in the effort with which I know you'll have to exert and willing will do so. So when we return, today's word, also a chapter out of The Schoolyard Millionaire, when we return. Put your lights on. Put your lights on. You're listening to On Top of the World Radio on Purpose. Christopher Story here along with Mr. David Webb. Behind the scenes, what you need to know is not only is he a producer, friend, engineer of the broadcast, he's trying to convince me to try something called Coke Zero. So maybe after the broadcast, I will go get myself a Coke Zero and I'll report next week what I think. Right now is a segment we're introducing here about what I'm writing. So the punny headline aside, right now, yeah, as I said before, it doesn't really land on radio, but you get the point. And I just want to share this, and here's why I'm doing it. Number one, I love this story. I want to share pieces and bits of it with you. Number two, I'm putting myself on the line. I'm telling you I'm going to have this book done. The manuscript will be done by end of January 2024. I'm going to have it in the hands of my editor and then off to the creative department in Chicago that does the layout for me and stuff. So it's going to be, I've got to put public pressure on myself. I know that about myself. I really do. So, okay, here we go. It's a chapter from The Schoolyard Millionaire, chapter 8. Kai filled the silence. Why not give Logos the whole dream? Because Logos is a dream stealer. If you allow your mind to focus on the logic only, and only the logic, you'll find 1,000 reasons why your dream will not work. Well, why do we have it at all then, Kai asked. Why do we have Logos at all? Great question. Logos should only be used to solve one task at a time. Turn your ideas over to logic slowly. Let your mind solve bites of the bigger challenge one by one. Kai wanted to make sure he was getting everything. So how we do anything is how we do everything. That's ethos, right? And our emotions are what drive us and allow us to create cool stuff, pathos. So does that mean then, like, Logos logic is sort of like the brake on my bicycle? If I press it too hard, I'll stop. But if I don't press it at all, I might lose control on the corner? Kai walked to the board. Am I right? Mr. Novak said as he clapped Kai on the back, what are you doing tomorrow? Well, remember, I have Saturday school. Mr. Novak winked at Kai. Something told him this wouldn't be an ordinary Saturday school. The next morning, Kai woke up earlier than usual. Today, he was skipping school, or at least the classroom. Mr. Novak had said that he'd be having a far better plan for Kai than being stuck in a classroom. He told Kai, ride your bike to Wendell's Cafe. Let's meet at 9 a.m. Bye, Mom. See you later, Kai hollered over his shoulder as he raced outside. His mom stood at the top of the stairs. She smiled as she watched Kai pedal down the driveway. She couldn't believe this was the same kid she had to practically drag out of bed last Saturday. Kai sped his way down the quiet streets between his house and Wendell's. He skidded to a stop in front of the cafe and parked his bike in the rack by the front door. Kai then suddenly noticed that Wendell's wasn't even open yet. What the heck? He said out loud. Just then, he saw Mr. Novak inside. He walked swiftly over to the door and unlocked it and swung it open. Top of the morning to you, Kai. Right on time. Exactly as I knew you would be, said Mr. Novak. Well, wait a minute. What gives? How can you be in there when it's closed? Kai was clearly perplexed. Come on in. I'll show you. Mr. Novak stepped aside and waved Kai through the still dark cafe. If you've read my Jacob Mann novels, you know that I'm having to resist the temptation that Kai would meet some unfortunate meat cleaver accident or something inside the cafe. But this book is being written in mind for children, number one, but also adults, childlike adults like myself. And what I'm putting into this book is every single thing I know, have learned, or read over the past 25 years about money, opportunity, living the good life, creating a fortune, creating wealth where you are with what you've got, and how to think about the world through the eyes of an investor. We didn't have no internet, but man, I never will forget the way the moonlight shined upon her head. And we were trying different things. I'm excited about it. I can't wait to see the opportunities that this opens up in people's lives, young people in particular. But I'm telling you, I just have reread the first probably dozen chapters or so, and I'm loving what I've got. I've got probably, I think I've got about a half a dozen more chapters to go to finish it out in the first draft. And then, like I said, hand it over to the editor is the hopes by the end of January. No, I take it back. That is the plan. By the end of January, and then bring it to market in March or April, maybe May, something like that. But I wanted to tell you about Jim Stovall. Jim Stovall is an author and a speaker and a businessman. He's an entrepreneur. It's maybe the biggest umbrella to put over him. He's an entrepreneur. And underneath that umbrella of entrepreneurialism, he has written books. He has produced nine of his books into incredible movies, to include The Ultimate Gift, The Ultimate Life, The Ultimate Legacy, The Lamp, and more. He's incredible. His speeches are what I found first. I just randomly happened upon Jim Stovall on YouTube. And I was like, who is this? This guy's amazing. And suddenly I've consumed hours of his speaking. And this just happened last week. And I'm like, this guy is amazing. His story, I'll tell just a brief piece of it, but I can't wait for him to share his whole story with you. 17 years of age, he wanted to be an NFL linebacker. He knew it. He could see it. He wanted that as a dream, and he was on his way. He was then getting a physical, preseason physical, and it was taking a lot longer than he expected. And suddenly there was a second and then a third doctor in the room, and they kind of had these like grave looks on their face like, okay, we've got something to tell you, young man. We don't know when, but when and why. We don't even really know why, but you are going to lose your eyesight, period, end of story. You will be blind. That was 17 years old. By the time he was 29, he actually was stone cold blind, period. Like zero eyesight at all. But those intervening years, he changed and shifted his dream from becoming an NFL player to an Olympic champion. And he went into weightlifting, something he couldn't do with limited or no sight. So he became an Olympic medalist in weightlifting. So then by the time his sight actually was literally all gone, he was scared. He didn't know what to do. He's in this little tiny room, just kind of cramped in there with a radio and a little recorder so he could listen to tapes and things. And then at some point he was watching a movie, and it was The Big Sleep, which is a Raymond Chandler book turned into a film. And he knew the movie inside and out, so he felt like he could listen to it. And at some point he said there was some gunfire, doors slamming, and car squealing away. And he was like, wait a minute, I don't remember who that is. I don't remember what just happened. I wish I could know. I wish somebody would tell me. That's when his television network was born in his mind for the near and no-sighted. And he ended up with a company that produced these types of visually assisted movies and television shows for over 1,000 networks. He ended up fabulously wealthy, wrote the book, The Ultimate Gift, and then the next in the series and the next and the next. He sold over 10 million books in some 30 languages. And he's incredible. He's got two new books coming out in April. And so I've been in communication with him. And I just have told him, you just are an incredible inspiration. My On Top of the World radio audience needs to know you. We need to get to know you better. We need your message. We need to hear from you. He's agreed to be on the program. It's going to be in March. And I couldn't be more excited. And I just feel like it's a little bit like, in my world, I'm getting to meet Mick Jagger. In your world, maybe you're getting to meet Taylor Swift. I don't know who, you know, which world you want to define yourself in right now. But this is a big deal. I'm excited. I couldn't be more excited. I mean, I could be, but I don't think I could be. And the part about he didn't see it coming, I don't know if you got that or not, but he's blind. But hold on. Reserve your judgment for a quick minute. In the movie The Ultimate Gift, he's blind, right? I mean, he has been since he's 29. So the movie comes out when he's about 50 or 55 or whatever, and he plays the limo driver. So, okay, he's got a good sense of humor. Let's just say that. It's just a little cameo role as the limo driver. It's fantastic. I'll give you something to complain about. Viktor Frankl was held in not one, but three concentration camps during World War II. He lost his mother. She died in the ovens. Father, wife, all dead. He somehow survived. And Viktor Frankl went on to have an enormous impact on the world with his book, Man's Search for Meaning. And in it, he shares a few things. So if you and I find ourselves wanting to complain, think about what he said. In the ordinary moments, discovery of extraordinary joy of simply being alive. Discover the extraordinary joy of simply being alive. Viktor Frankl said, happiness is woven into the fabric of every day, waiting to be unraveled in the threads of the mundane. The mundane. Simple. Every day. Happiness. Viktor Frankl also said, amidst the routine, find the rhythm of contentment, for meaning dances in the ordinary. Meaning dances in the ordinary. In the simplicity of every day lies the profound beauty of a well-lived life. See, we've run the clock out here virtually. Was going to do a word. Also, I've got some ideas from Dale Carnegie that I want to share on living a fulfilled life. And I think what I'm going to do is hold that for Thursday, Backyard Millionaire. We're also going to be talking about how to measure your life and measure your ROI in life, your return on investment. How do you want to show up in the world of investment? So we'll talk about that in addition to, like I said, Dale Carnegie, living a fulfilled life. I'll give you just a brief insight into that. Practicing gratitude is one of the biggest, rewarding, easiest thing to do, which means it's the easiest thing to not do. But think about that, gratitude as a practice. Can you put gratitude into practice such that every single day, this is from Jim Stovall, every single day, find 10 things in the morning, first thing in the morning, that you're grateful for. He called it his golden list. His grandmother gave that to him when he's 5 years old. Create your golden list every day. Put gratitude in writing in your life, and you'll see it show up in results of your day. I'm Chris Story for David Webb and myself, reminding you to live in the present. Look forward, learn from the past, but live the good life right here in the present.